Relation of the House of Justice will authentically express the spirit of equality in our teachings. Another dimension of the covenant is that it avoids the establishment of a priesthood, when we have seen historically that a priesthood has been so detrimental to the rights of women. Much more than that, it avoids institutions of the faith perpetuating behavior of a priestly nature, acting like priests, making dogmatic statements, which would then be from a fallible perspective and could reflect a prejudice against women. So the covenant is in many ways a vital protection to women. Let me now turn more specifically to the question of women and peace. The history of the 19th and 20th centuries indicates that there has been a significant alliance between the efforts of women to gain emancipation, to gain the right to vote and to participate in society, and their concern for peace. Let me take just one example. The Women's Peace Festival, held on the 2nd of June 1873, well over 100 years ago, held in large cities in the United States and Europe. It arose from an organization of women who were appalled at the degree of suffering that occurred in the Franco-Prussian War, formed a women's organization to promote the Women's Peace Festival to bring about peace. And this festival of 1873 called for the following measures. One, the abolition of war through general disarmament. The formation of a Congress of Nations with compulsory jurisdiction over the nations of the world. The abolition of the sale of liquor as a disturber of peace. The prohibition of the sale and carrying of deadly weapons. The removal of inequality based on sex, color, or race. And the identification of the role of women to protest against war and to offer arbitration for the settlement of disputes. Over 100 years ago, women, a women's organization in North America and Europe, was calling for international government to bring about general disarmament of the nations of the world and compulsory arbitration to settle international disputes. This Women's Peace Festival ultimately fell into division due to disunity over the issue of American military policy toward the American Indians in the 19th century, but it led to a number of organizations which persist to the present day. For example, the Women's Peace Party associated with Jane Addams, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and the Women's Peace Session of 1921. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom made proposals to the 1919 Peace Conference in Paris at the conclusion of World War I. They made a number of proposals to bring about a lasting peace. These proposals were rejected by the 1919 Peace Conference. One of the people present at that conference was a man called Gunnar Jahn. In 1946, 27 years later, he was part of the Nobel Institute in Scandinavia, which awarded the Nobel Peace Prize to Emily Balk for her work with Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. And at that time, he made this statement. He said, "I want to say so much, it would have been extremely wise if the proposal the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom made to the conference in 1919 had been accepted by the conference. But few of the men listened to what the women had to say. The atmosphere was too bitter and revengeful. On top of this was the fact that the proposal was made by women. In our patriarchal world, suggestions which come from women are seldom taken seriously." And Gunnar Jahn concluded with these words, "Sometimes it would be wise of the men to spare their condescending smiles." So my point is simply to indicate that women have been associated with the achievement of peace in a very significant way in the 19th and 20th century. Now, what can we say about the Baha'i approach to peace and to the alliance between the equality of men and women and the achievement of peace? I think it rests upon three major principles. The first of these is our principle of the organic unit, and this is a familiar concept to most Baha'is. We believe that the kind of society we want to form through the Baha'i administrative order is an organic unit, is like a living being, interconnected, the welfare of each element interactively relating to the welfare of the whole. And this is very relevant to the question of the equality of men and women, because our teachings indicate, firstly, that peace requires unity. In order to have peace, we must have unity. This unity implies oneness of mankind. If we don't have oneness of mankind, we don't have a basic unity, and we don't have peace. And equality of men and women is fundamental for the oneness of mankind. It is not just a question of relationship between races or segments of society. It is also a question of relationship between men and women. So in that sense, the equality of men and women is a basic element of the formation of an organic unit of human society with all the spiritual powers which our teachings identify with the organic unit. The House of Justice, in its statement on peace, indicates that inequality produces harmful attitudes in men which transfer to the larger society. And this is a concept stated also by Abdu'l-Bahá in several places. For example, Abdu'l-Bahá says, "As long as women are prevented from attaining their highest possibilities, so long will men be unable to achieve the greatness which might be theirs." And referring to men and women, he says, "If one is defective, the other will necessarily be incomplete, and perfections cannot be attained. If either proves defective, the defect will naturally extend to the other." So, what I get from these passages is if women are denied equality, men also are prevented from achieving their fullest development, or as Abdu'l-Bahá says, men are prevented from achieving the greatness which might be theirs. So in a very real sense, men are held hostage to women. That if the male segment of our population denies equality to women, then those males are themselves prevented from fulfilling their potential, from realizing what Abdu'l-Bahá describes as the greatness which might be theirs. Abdu'l-Bahá in many places refers to the important role to be played by mothers in the achievement of peace. And he refers to the fact that mothers will not willingly send their sons to war to be shot down and mercilessly killed for some cause over the territoriality or the like after those sons have been reared for 20 or so years. And I think there are deeper significances which go beyond simply the sending of sons to war. That motherhood involves unselfish action in nurturing and caring for others. It involves the sacrifice of oneself to the individual embryo growing within, and the feeding of this new creation with one's own milk, with the product of one's own body, so that the very process of motherhood gives rise to the sense of unselfishness, the sense of nurturance and caring for others, rather than the sense of dominance and control. And what the world needs for the achievement of peace is this greater sense of nurturance and a lesser sense of dominance. And this may also be another element to the important role that women will play in the achievement and preservation of peace. Let me conclude now by briefly mentioning some of the elements that I find within the Baha'i writings to guide us in implementing the Baha'i principle of the equality of men and women. What guidelines should we use? What things should we be careful of? What should we avoid? What should we do in order to bring about the equality of men and women? And I think there are five basic principles. The first is that we are enjoined in our writings to avoid the use of force or demonstrations. Abdu'l-Bahá says, "Demonstrations of force, such as are now taking place in England, are neither becoming nor effective in the cause of womanhood and equality. Our approach is not through the use of force." The second principle, I think, is a recognition that any change is evolutionary. We would desire to be instantaneous, to occur overnight, but that's not the way humans work. It is evolutionary. The House of Justice, in a statement on their behalf, wrote, "The principle of the equality between women and men, like the other teachings of the faith, can be effectively and universally established among the Friends when it is pursued in conjunction with all other aspects of Baha'i life. Change is an evolutionary process requiring patience with oneself and others, loving education, and the passage of time as the believers deepen their knowledge of the faith, gradually discard long-held traditional attitudes, and progressively conform their lives to the unifying teachings of the cause. Patience, evolution, gradual development, loving education, the passage of time, patience with oneself and others." A third principle is the need to avoid contention between men and women. Abdu'l-Bahá referred to a women's assemblage formed by the Baha'i women of Iran for the promotion of knowledge. And in writing advice to that assemblage, he said, "It should be done in such a way that differences will day by day be entirely wiped out. Not that, God forbid, it will end in argumentation between men and women. In brief, ye should now engage in matters of pure spirituality and not contend with men." And I think we have seen in the larger society the futility and sterility of the polarization of antagonism between men and women on this issue, and we are told in our teachings we must avoid this. Our writings tell us that a great responsibility rests upon men to encourage women and to eradicate the male assumption of superiority. Abdu'l-Bahá says, "The assumption of superiority by man will continue to be depressing to the ambition of woman, as if her attainment to equality was creationally impossible. Woman's aspiration towards advancement will be checked by it, and she will gradually become hopeless. On the contrary, we must declare her capacity is equal, even greater than man's. This will inspire her with hope and ambition." So my understanding of this passage is that men have a great responsibility to offer sincere and genuine and constructive encouragement to women in all areas of development and advancement, and to eliminate what Abdu'l-Bahá describes as the assumption of superiority by man. And the final principle is the importance of women striving through their own efforts at self-development and accomplishment. Abdu'l-Bahá says, "Woman must endeavor to attain greater perfection, to be man's equal in every respect, to make progress in all in which she has been backward, so that man will be compelled to acknowledge her equality of capacity and attainment. And I think these five principles underlie a constructive Baha'i approach to the implementation of this principle of equality of men and women, which can bring the Baha'i community so much renown in the world. I'd like to conclude my presentation tonight by reading to you a poem called The Seeker, written by a Baha'i, Gertrude Robinson, and published in a Baha'i World volume about 40 to 45 years ago. And I read this poem because, although the title is The Seeker, I believe it expresses very clearly and very eloquently the aspirations of women which we as Baha'is are committed to the support and nurturance of. So I conclude with this poem. There must be a loveliness I have not known, else hunger would not be so deep. Despair would crush me. But this yearning passion for the altitudes beyond my ken knows but one answer, full completion. No cry can be so faint, but finds response somewhere in all infinity. And so my soul shall keep its inner urge to scale the unseen heights and breathe the unimagined airs of rarefied and mystic climes. Somewhere all beauty waits beyond the seven valleys of the soul, and naught shall keep my hungry heart from seeking through the endless reach of all eternity the loveliness my heart has never known. Thank you.